St. John's Lutheran Church of Northfield is celebrating its 150th anniversary in 2019. As part of this sesquicentennial, the church is conducting oral history interviews that will help to preserve the history of the church and the experience of our longtime members. I am Eric Sponheim from the Evangelism and Communications Committee. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by longtime St. John's member Lowell Johnson. Welcome, Lowell.
Thank you.
When did you join St. John's? How did you hear about the church? And tell us about your family members as well.
Okay, well, I joined St. John's when I came back to St. Olaf to teach in 1963. So I have been here for 56 years, a member of St. John's. But also, I went to St. John's for 4 years when I was at St. Olaf, 1948 to 52. Because there was no chapel at St. Olaf. So the students all came to St. John's for Sunday service. So I've been coming here for 60 years, in other words.
Student congregation at St. Olaf wasn't really underway then?
That's right. They had daily chapel, but they did not have Sunday services. So people went to various churches in town. I went to St. John's, where most of them went, I think. And so they didn't build the chapel at St. Olaf till, I think, 51. And so as a result, we went there. Right. So those are the days when we had three services at St. John's, all of them packed. Mm-hmm. And they're not just with students either. But that was true even when I came back in the 60s. We had three services that are all seemed to be packed. Now we got two rather thin services.
So 48 to 52
was when I was a student at St. Olaf.
Yeah, my parents were at Concordia Moorhead from 49 to 53, and I've heard about the required chapel there. Was chapel at St. Olaf back then? I was at St. Olaf in the late '70s, early '80s. Yeah,
chapel was never required at St. Olaf. Yeah. I don't think in its history it was not required. But daily chapel attendance then was very, people went, primarily. You know. So it was a respected time slot for going to chapel.
Right. How about the role of St. John's in your family life?
Well, we have five children, my wife Barbara and I. The youngest two were born in Northfield and were baptized at St. John's. All five of them were confirmed at St. John's. And so, just recently, our youngest, our daughter Inger and her husband Dan Hansen have moved back to Northfield about 3 years ago and are members of St. John's. So they and their three girls, Sylvie, Taya, and Mari, are members of St. John's.
So you're getting a multi-generational church experience again after many years.
Yeah, that's right. And the our son Barron, our fourth son Barron, was baptized by President the President of St. Olaf College.
Oh, Sid Rand.
Who was acting as the assistant minister that particular Sunday. So he baptized her. It was just. In those days, the presidents of St. Olaf were ordained and often acted as assistant ministers at St. John's.
Very interesting. Well, we previously did an oral history with John Quam, actually we did Joe Shaw as well, and I think it was Joe who mentioned Sid in that.
I gave
some review of some building project plans that there was a very close set of eyes there from Sid.
But it's been, St. John's been very important in our family's life because our family went here, as I said, were baptized or confirmed, all of them were five were confirmed here. And so therefore that was a part of our weekly life. And they were very active in the various youth groups at St. Olaf. I was never very active as a member. Because I had, I actually had two jobs most of my life. And so I was a Naval Reserve officer for 20 years. So my weekends were otherwise taken, and I had other challenges. But so I did. So I was a member and supported the congregation. After I retired, I served as a usher for about 10 years. But and I think Pam Schwant and I started the sort of some years ago now a poetry reading in the in between the two services. So we had a poetry session. But my activities at St. John's have been quite limited.
Well, you've already anticipated the question about some of the things you've been involved in.
Yeah,
what was the content of the poetry readings?
We tried to take poetry that had a religious nature to it from British literature and American literature from the earliest days.
Like John Donne.
John Donne, right, and things like that. And then examples of how poetry, religious poetry, express their ideas. And of course, some of the major writers in British literature were excellent poets of religious nature. So it was fun. And we passed out papers, passed out poems.
That is really intriguing.
So it was just a different slant as to what was going on in between services during that hour.
Metaphysical poets between services. That's where else can you get that?
And a little Shakespeare.
Well, you've already anticipated another of these sample questions as well. Who are some of the St. John's members who have influenced you? You mentioned Pam Schwant the poetry readings.
I think most of the St. John members who influenced me were my colleagues at St. Olaf who were members of St. John's. Like you mentioned Joe Shaw and Pam Schwant. But I think we'll never forget Boral Bjorn, who was then the pastor, I think the only pastor for three services. And he was very active when we moved to Northfield. He came to visit us. And we were looking for a new home, and we were looking for a house. And we had rented one, and he alerted me to a possibility, and we checked it out and bought it and lived in that house on Manitou Street for 42 or 43 years.
Wow, but so the idea to get that particular residence grew out of conversation from a pastoral visit.
Right, that's right, that's right. So Boral Bjorn was a very, was important in that regard, but many others, I think, pastors I enjoyed as pastors, not personal friends,
right,
and so on. And but most of my colleagues at St. Olaf, who are my age primarily, were the ones that I knew most, and someone like Joe Shaw, still a close friend. So
great. Well, and the idea for me to invite you we would have gotten to eventually.
Yeah, right.
But the idea,
the catalyst
for getting you in today was your friend Vern Fiatok.
Vern and I we had families the same age, and they grew up together, and we were taught together. So, they're right. People. Faculty members at St. John's who were our age and had similar family issues and times and so on. That's great.
How about worship and music? Even to the level of, if you would like to mention a few favorite hymns, we would love to hear the names of those.
Well, I like Holy, Holy, Holy.
That's an old powerhouse.
Since I'm a retired naval officer, I like the Navy hymn, which we don't sing as a Navy.
But which one is that?
Eternal Father, strong to save, was harmed.
I know that one.
Ways, right? And there's so many good hymns in the hymnal, particularly the the traditional Lutheran hymns of the Norwegian Lutheran Church, or the ELCA, the old ELCA, that hard to pick them all out. If I were to have to pick one, pick hymns out for my own funeral, it would be an effort.
To call the list.
Yeah, yes. Right. To get them down right.
What else in terms of worship and music?
I think St. John's has been one of its strong merits. Has always been its music. Not only an excellent organ and organist professional there, but also great music from the main choir to youth choirs and in between service individual soloists and the like. I mean, the strength of the Lutheran Church in general is music, and St. John's lives up to that mark and distinguishes it. I mean, over the years I've gone to other services, Lutheran and other non-Lutheran, and there is a remarkable distance between the music level at St. John's and what it offers to the parishioner and what can be found in other places. Right. I even went to I was in California naturally, but a church where they had lots of loudspeakers and music, and they had screens where they had the text on the screen and so on. It was a different kind of worship service. One that, at my age, I'm not particularly interested in. I suppose young people might find it more attractive, obviously.
Right. Well, you're right. Martin Luther really set the tone on music, and it is very
central. He wrote
a
lot of good hymns.
Just have to be sure not to end Mighty Fortress on the verse that ends with the devil in control.
Yeah, right. Right. But
the other elements of worship, of course, sermons and sacrament of Holy Communion, has during that long period that goes back as far back as 1948. Have you found, was weekly commune then the practice, or did that come in at some point?
I think even Luther said once or twice a year is sufficient for a communion. Mm-hmm. But and when I grew up in a Lutheran church in Trinity Lutheran in New Richland, Minnesota, which is about 60 miles south of here.
Sure.
We had communion, I think, maybe four times a year or something. And so it was highly respected, and people really contemplated before they went to communion. But then as we've gotten more modern and more with the Roman Catholic image and have this Sunday communion, people just sort of queue up and line up and go through it, and I don't think that we've gained anything by a daily communion, by a weekly communion. And if anything, if you do something too often, whatever it is, however valuable it is, if it becomes routine, it doesn't become just routine, you know. The same can be said for praying the Lord's Prayer. I mean, for some it's just a rote, they just rattle it off, whether they're really thinking about what they're praying, or when they go to communion, whether they think about what they're receiving, other than who dares sit in the pew by himself. And then all of a sudden he's labeled, whatever, a non-Lutheran or something. There is a tendency to track everything and make people follow a line. So sermons are important. Good sermons, and we've been blessed in these 60 years that I've been with St. John's with a number of outstanding preachers as ministers. We've also had some who were not so outstanding, but good administrators or had other benefits. And so, but I think a preacher is still the key to the service.
Word.
The word is the word.
Well, there's a nice pull-out quote. We hope to have some snippets of these available through Northfield Historical Society as well as on the church website. So that's the word is the word. That's really pithy for the Twitter era.
I'm not much on Twitter, but nevertheless, right. So, I appreciate going to church, the opportunity. So I know that some people, as they get older, can't do it, or forced to stay in their home or wherever they may be getting medical attention. So I'm one of the fortunate elderly ones who can go to church and enjoy the camaraderie of my colleagues and my fellow worshipers and benefit from what's going on at St. John's. And so that makes me very fortunate. And I get to worship with my daughter and her family. So I have my granddaughters and my wife, and always enjoy that. So
it's good. Very central to you, clearly. Right. We've already talked some about how the church has changed over time. You mentioned how back there in the 40s and 50s, three services, all very well attended. Now there are two that are, with some exceptions, like when the St. Elf Choir's here a couple of weeks ago, that was very well attended. But you're right, sometimes it can seem sparse. What else would you call attention to about change?
Well, I think that we're celebrating our 150th anniversary of St. John's Lutheran. I doubt it'll be here in 50 years.
Just sociologically, the way the trends.
And the more the church becomes like everything else, the less valuable it becomes. And we try to become, accommodate so many different kinds of influences, and trying to accommodate them all and be more like this and more like that. And we start losing our identity. And so there's no particular reason why one should go to church then. And I don't know about the individual beliefs of my fellow worshipers, what they believe, and it's none of my business, I guess, but the point is, you can see there's a modicum of young people in the congregation, and they are so that I don't think the future is very bright for the Christian Church in general, and St. John's is no exception. So it'll be fascinating to see. I mean, what it'll be like in 50 years from now, if there will be a St. John's, or whether it'll be just sort of like a Unitarian church or some other little social gathering.
Indeed, one only has to look to Europe to see how church attendance can really become
enormous. In fact, that's where you do look. I mean, we like to think of what's going on in Africa, but we forget what's going on in Europe, in Norway or Sweden or England and Germany. And really, which one is our pattern? Which one are we following, And it's the European pattern is the one where, people show up for marriage and sometimes a baptism and funerals. And anyway.
I like the way you laid out those two examples, Lowell, and there's an old-fashioned blackboard right behind you. I don't see any chalk on it, but you could, if you were to be presiding at a class right now, you could, and you wanted to elaborate. If I asked you to elaborate on that, you could draw Africa over here and Europe over here, and maybe apologize for, I don't know how good of a visual artist you are, but I know if I were doing that, I'd be apologizing for my penmanship. But then, we do have two very different examples there, because the African church, as you alluded to, is exploding with interest.
My wife and I were, about 20 years ago, we were in the Gambia in West Africa. We were there for
because I had never been to West Africa. We went there for about a week and attended the installation of the first Gambian-born bishop of the Episcopalian Church, or the Anglican Church at that time. And it was stunning. It was in a soccer stadium. The service went on in a hot sun for 3 hours. We only stayed for about an hour and a half, and we were already burned enough to the crisp. But it was clear that there was a wellspring of excitement, support, and pride, and so on, in this installation of this Anglican bishop, and you can see that elsewhere. When you go to Europe, we have marvelous cathedrals and church buildings. And,
but 50 years cautionary tale. Yeah. I'm struck by thinking back of some of the points we touched on about the story about how the pastor visited you and helped you find a house. I mean, that would be one potential way the church could reform. Would be to have house church, like people hosting worship of a relatively small group.
He knew what was going on in the city.
Yeah,
I mean, he was not so removed from what was going on in the city that he didn't feel it was in his responsibility. But he was trying to help us, and he helped us. And I'll not forget that, And he had a lot to do. He had a big family of his own to take care of. He didn't have a lot of, it was a big church, a big congregation, but he didn't have a lot of help except calling assistant pastors from the religion department or the college and so on. And then before they started adding on a lot of extra pastors. Now we have two pastors and visitation pastors, and so we got lots of help. And there's a lot of people that need the help, so I'm not saying we don't need them, it's just that there's a lot more help on that pastoral role than there seemed to be in the past.
Well, it'll be fascinating to see how it unfolds, and I may think back to this interview as I'm 59, so I guess you've got 30 years on me there, so I may get a little bit more of a glimpse of this, God willing, than you, and I may think back to this interview and think, well, Lowell was right or Lowell was wrong.
Yeah, right. Well, let's hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's hope I'm wrong, but I'm quite optimistic in general.
Yep.
So, but just to be honest with you, I think the direction of Christianity in general, and Lutheranism in particular, is not bright.
It'll find ways to take.
Oh, it'll survive.
To take new forms.
Yeah, it'll survive. Yeah. Even the Congo Congregationalists have survived, but we need not go on any more on that.
Any final reflections as we think about wrapping up?
Yeah. No, I think that's, I don't want to go on, but our time is probably up. But thank you very much for asking me to sit in on this.
Oh, my pleasure, Lowell.
And add to it. Been here 60 years. I've been attending St. John's for 60 years. I hope to be here a few more years.
Absolutely. We'll turn off the device and talk a little Shakespeare now.
Okay, all right.